Here's a startling fact. If you printed a 20 note in your basement, you'd face prosecution for counterfeiting. Yet private banks create 97% of the money in circulation through the simple act of typing numbers into computers. This isn't a conspiracy theory. It's how our banking system actually works. Martin Wolf of the Financial Times calls it delegating a core public function to a private and often irresponsible commercial oligopoly. While governments prosecute counterfeiters with one hand, they grant banks the legal right to create money with the other. This privilege has transformed banking into something that violates almost every principle of capitalism while threatening economic stability itself. Medieval goldsmiths noticed merchants rarely claimed their stored gold, preferring to trade paper receipts instead. So they began issuing more receipts than they had gold, creating money from thin air. This became fractional reserve banking, the foundation of our modern system. When you take out a $10,000 loan today, your bank doesn't transfer money from another account. It updates its database, recording the loan as an asset while crediting your account. That money didn't exist before. As Paul Tucker, former deputy governor of the Bank of England, explained, banks can lend simply by expanding the two sides of their balance sheet simultaneously. When you repay the loan, the money vanishes. Banks don't just move money around, they control how much exists and who gets it. With commercial banks creating 97% of our money supply and the Bank of England just 3%, these institutions wield extraordinary economic power. Why do financial crises keep happening? Economist Hyman Minsky discovered that stability itself breeds instability. After a recession, when debt is low and caution prevails, the economy gradually recovers. As loans get repaid, confidence grows. Banks lend more freely. Asset prices rise. Success breeds optimism, which breeds risk-taking. Eventually, the economy enters what Minsky called a euphoric phase. Firms take on debt, assuming endless expansion. Some borrowers can only service debts if asset prices keep rising, what Minsky called Ponzi units. When interest rates rise or asset prices stall, these units must sell assets, flooding the market and triggering price declines. Defaults cascade and crisis erupts. Historical data confirms this pattern. Research examining 14 advanced countries between 1870 and 2008 shows financial crises are typically credit booms gone wrong. The UK has experienced 12 banking crises since 1800, roughly one every 15 years. The pattern repeats because the system itself is unstable. Between 2002 and 2008, banks doubled the UK money supply primarily through mortgage lending, creating a self-reinforcing cycle. More lending drove up prices, which required larger mortgages, which drove prices higher still. In major cities like London, average house prices soared to over 10 times average salaries, compared to just 3 times in the 1960s. Young professionals now spend their entire 30s sharing rentals or living with parents, often spending over 50% of income on housing versus 25% for previous generations. Property has become the default middle-class retirement strategy. Yet these price increases stem from bank lending rather than genuine value creation. When banks create money to purchase existing assets rather than fund productive investment, they inflate prices without increasing economic output. The economy becomes dangerously dependent on continued house price inflation. Consumer spending relies on home equity withdrawal, and minor interest rate increases trigger market instability. When corrections occur, they devastate entire economies through widespread defaults and bank failures. The 2008 crisis exemplified this pattern, while the fundamental problem, housing affordability and widening intergenerational wealth gaps, remains unsolved. Here's the paradox. Since 97% of money exists as bank deposits created through lending, debt is necessary for money to exist. When people collectively try to reduce debt, the money supply contracts, typically causing recession and making repayment even harder. Unemployment often forces more borrowing. The system transfers wealth upward through interest. With a money supply of approximately $2 trillion and average interest rates of 8%, the non-bank sector must transfer about $160 billion annually to banks simply to maintain the money supply, a charge for something the state could provide at minimal cost. From 2002 to 2009, banks increased the money supplied by roughly $1 trillion. Had the government created this money instead, UK residents could have paid $1 trillion less in taxes, public services could have received $1 trillion more funding, or the entire national debt could have been repaid. Instead, this wealth transferred to private banks. Banks wield enormous economic power by creating 97% of the UK's money supply. In the 5 years before the financial crisis, their gross lending to households, $2.9 trillion, exceeded total government spending, $2.1 trillion. By deciding where to lend, banks shape economic activity more profoundly than democratically elected governments. Just five major banks control 61 to 85% of various financial markets, with only 78 board members between them. These largely unaccountable individuals effectively direct Britain's economic future. Banks systematically favor asset-backed lending like mortgages over productive business investments, creating asset bubbles while starving innovative sectors of capital. Public understanding remains dangerously limited. An ICM poll revealed that 74% incorrectly believe they legally own the money in their accounts, when legally, the bank owns these deposits. Unlike pension funds, which must disclose how ethical considerations affect investments, banks operate without transparency requirements, despite their decisions affecting everything from housing affordability to climate change. Fundamental reform would strip banks of money creation while preserving their useful functions. The central bank would create all money through two account types. Transaction accounts would hold risk-free central bank money, electronic safe deposit boxes immune to bank failure. Investment accounts would replace savings. Funds transfer immediately to the bank's investment pool, cannot be used as money, remain illiquid, carry no government guarantee, and explicitly share risk. An independent money creation committee would control money creation with a mandate of targeting inflation. Unlike today's indirect control through interest rates, the MCC would exercise direct, transparent authority. New money would enter through government spending on infrastructure, strategic tax cuts, direct citizen payments, or targeted business lending, ensuring money reaches ordinary people rather than inflating asset bubbles. To ensure adequate credit access, the MCC would provide newly created money earmarked for productive business lending. Currently, less than 10% of UK bank lending supports productive businesses, with most flowing into property speculation. The transition involves converting bank deposits to state-issued currency overnight, then allowing 10-30 years for reducing household debt. Banks would owe interest-free conversion liabilities to the Bank of England, providing government approximately $1 trillion over 20 years without causing inflation. The reformed system would reduce inequality by eliminating the need to rent money from banks. Stable asset prices would increase housing affordability. Fewer crises would eliminate costly bailouts disproportionately affecting the poor. Since lending wouldn't increase money supply, banks couldn't inflate asset bubbles. Our monetary system is merely rules and computer systems, relatively simple to fix once political will exists.